Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations of topics covered by Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox from her previous podcast, Circle Craft Studies and Nature Folk. In tonight's encore presentation from 2012, Selena discussed old and new customs, rites, and ways of contacting, aligning, and working with the spiritual dimensions of stone circles, sacred groves, and other ceremonial places.
Well, welcome to Sacred Sites and Spirits of Place. This is a brand new workshop, so you all are getting a chance to test drive it. And yes, there are handout sheets. So what I invite you all to do as we start out is take a few moments and center ourselves. And call to mind the phrase sacred site. Just focus on that concept for a few moments. And as you do, let come to mind a sacred site that you've been to. And an experience of being at that sacred site. What do you remember about your experience with that sacred site? Now continuing your focus on sacred site, call to mind a sacred site that you would like to be at, that you haven't gone to physically before. And call to mind something that's calling you to that place. Why do you feel called to go to that site? And finally, take a few moments now and experience this place where we are gathered right now as a sacred site. This temple room, a place of rituals, workshops such as this, celebrations, and connect now also with the land that it is on. Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. And in the next few moments of quiet, in your own way, according to your own spiritual path, silently pay your respects to this sacred site and this sacred land. And if it feels right to do so, invite the spirits of Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, the spirit of this temple room, to guide you in your learning and exploration of sacred sites and the spirits of place. And as you feel complete with that, take some deep, slow breaths and return to a more waking state of consciousness. And let's reflect a bit on why are sites sacred? What makes a sacred site? Some sacred sites become sacred sites because they have some unique feature, natural beauty, or a natural formation, a place that's awe-inspiring, that's spiritually uplifting. It might be an old growth forest or a cave with beautiful stalactites and stalagmites. It might be a beach on a barrier island that hasn't been developed, where you can walk and there aren't other humans around, or very many of them. You experience yourself there with sea breezes and birds and sea creatures. It might be a place that is desert, very dry and hot, yet in its barrenness, having rock formations that are intriguing and beautiful. It might be a mountaintop or a hilltop. It might be an old tree that has been there for more than 100 years, a wise old tree. Some sites, by their very being, are a kind of sacred site for humans. Some sites are sacred sites because humans have decided to do ceremonies there and have them be a sacred site. Set up a spiritual center, and part of that decision-making may be around its natural beauty, its natural features. A site might be sacred because there is some kind of intense human happening there. What do I mean by intense human happening? It could be something that has been hard, challenging, tragic, such as a battlefield, or, as in the case of where the Twin Towers used to be, in New York City, many people see that as hallowed ground because so many people died during the terrorist attacks of September 11th of 2001. So a park is there now, and as part of the planning of that park and the center there, there are places for people to do personal reflection, whether it be spiritual or religious, or philosophically contemplative, that because of the tragedies at that place, it's become sacred to many people. It's a kind of cemetery due to the fact that people have passed on. But some intense happenings might be awesome in a good sense of the word. Someone has had a vision at a particular place, or a message has come to someone in a dream to go out and start a sacred area, place at the region where one has been dreaming. So it could be a vision or a dream or some spiritually uplifting experience that's happened to a human that causes a sacred site structure and construction to happen around there. And a sacred site grows as a sacred site the more that it is used over time, whether it's a single person or a small community or a large community. Now, there's different types of sacred sites. There's the naturally occurring ones, and these are those places of scenic beauty and mystery. Sacred sites might be constructed sites, ones such as temples. If you've been to Athens, you know the Acropolis and the Parthenon. That was a sacred site created for honoring the goddess Athena. The sacred site we're in right now, which is the temple room of Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, began its life as a barn. And then it got transformed into a multi-purpose room, which was part ritual space and part office space. And then it evolved again to become mainly a ritual space, with some other areas adjoining this being where our offices are. Some of the more popular and well-known of constructed sacred sites are stone circles or stone rings, wood hinges, circles with large wooden poles that are aligned to the setting of the sun at different times of year, and sometimes the rising and setting of the moon as well. A cemetery is an example of a constructed sacred space. We have a cemetery here at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, and it began with a place on a ridgetop not too far from where our stone circle is, and we started interring cremains, and now the cemetery has expanded, and we have the additional zoning to do natural burials. And so we added the cemetery part of our project once the land itself was paid for in 1995, and we've been developing it as a sacred site cemetery ever since. Labyrinths are another example of a sacred site. On this land, we have a spiral labyrinth that was created a number of years ago. It's a hedge labyrinth. It's made by mowing it, and there'll be a chance at our Green Spirit Festival this year to go and walk the spiral labyrinth by candlelight after our main ritual at the festival. Another type of sacred site is a sacred site where something amazing has occurred or something tragic has occurred. And certainly some sacred sites that I'm familiar with have been the homes to our biggest gathering of the year, the Pagan Spirit Gathering. Yes, it's been a campground at the different locations we've been at, but through repeated use of the campground area itself, some of the dynamics of sacred site work has come into being just by virtue of so many people converging consistently at a place and doing ceremonies. Essentially, a sacred site is a place where humankind connects with the divine, as one, as many. It's a portal into the world of the sacred. Now, you might say, in a way, all places are sacred, and truly that's the case. Wherever we are, we can consider a sacred site. But in talking about sacred sites in this workshop, I'm really looking at those sacred sites that have repeated use for an individual, for a family, for a group, for a community, and beyond, over time and space. As we began our workshop and we started talking about some of the sacred sites that we're aware of, one of the first ones mentioned is Stonehenge. Well, that is a World Heritage Site. It's an archaeological site. It is a sacred site, was a sacred site, and people today are just drawn there, not only because of its uniqueness, but so many people have been doing ritual work at that place. It's really become a place of power and transformation. don't even need to do a ritual at that site. Just going there, a force field has built up on that sacred site, which just going in the presence, you can find yourself moving into a meditative state or having insight and connection. And certainly in starting the Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve Land Project, we looked for a place that was large enough and private enough and had natural beauty that we could not only use it in the near future, but we're building for future generations. And one of our criteria was to have land that actually had a sacred site on it, at least one already. And that place is Spirit Rock. We have some other places that we suspect were also sacred areas because of traces of previous cultures that we have found. And I think it's wonderful that over the years, since we got this property in 1983, that this sacred land has really grown in many different ways. This is a multi-generational workshop, and for those who will be listening to this podcast later, I want to honor my teaching assistant, Griffith, who is a 14 months old by God and Goddess son, and yes, you're getting to help me teach about sacred sites. That's great. So one of the things about sacred sites is we do think about them across the generations. And some of the most ancient sacred sites that are still here on planet Earth today are continuing to be active. Not all sacred sites are, but the Great Pyramids, and I mentioned the Parthenon and Stonehenge, and an even bigger stone circle, Avebury, which is so large in the UK that a village is inside of it. New Grange in Ireland, which was created to be in alignment with the winter solstice dawning of the sun. And those are just some of the most well-known of the sacred sites that I've had connection with over time. So let's take a few moments now and look at some ways to work with a sacred site. Learn about it. Well, how do you learn about it? The internet can be a great help. Google it, but go to more than one site. Talk to somebody who has gone to the sacred site. If the sacred site has a website, go visit it. If it has a Facebook page you're thinking about going, like it. Find out as much as you can about the sacred site that you're wanting to learn about. Find out about not only its human history, but if you can, look at the geological history and learn about the natural features. But most importantly, find out when it's available for visitation and what the protocols are for use. Don't assume because something has been used in the past as a sacred site that it's on a map and that there's information about it that you can just go to that site and do whatever you want at the site, including leaving items. Some places are archaeological sites and they don't want anything left but words of respect and appreciation because they don't want the archaeology confused. And so that's an important thing to find out. If you want to go to a sacred site and do some drumming or chanting, well, find out who else is going to be there and whoever's the caretaker of that site, if that's an okay thing to do. And also find out what the sacred site is like during the course of the year. And I think it's great to be able to connect with a sacred site more than at one season because the beauty of the changing climate and environment can really add some additional understandings and dimensions to that. Another way to work with a sacred site, even before you go there, is look at some photographs and then do a meditation. Actually project yourself to the sacred site before you go there. get a sense of it. Why? It starts increasing your own awareness, not only of the site itself, but that spiritual dimension of the sacred site, what you might call the soul of the site, the spirit of place. Then, of course, a way to work with the sacred site is to actually go there. Show up, journey to it, and experience it. Reflect on your experiences. And the final way to work with the sacred site is to really deepen your connection with it and intentionally acknowledge and connect with its soul, its spirit of place. When you work with it with that kind of intentional way, amazing things can happen. You can get messages come to you as to how to work with it and what perhaps has happened in the past and what might happen in the future. The spirit of place, as I mentioned before, you could call as a soul of the site. It's something that goes across time, across those who use it, of their diversity of culture and spirituality. It goes across species even, because not only humans will hang out at sacred sites, human created or just naturally occurring, but chances are when you have a sacred site experience and it's an outdoor site, you're going to encounter other life forms that you'll be interacting with. The spirit of place is the essence not only of the particular spot of land, or if it's a watery place, the watery place, but the whole ecosystem that is around it. It's important to recognize that in working with spirit of place, that like developing any other type of spiritual relationship with a deity or an ancestor or with an elemental force, that relationship work doesn't necessarily happen automatically. It's something that helps if you are able to work with it over time and with intention as part of a spiritual practice. So, looking at specific ways of working with spirit of place at a sacred site, acknowledge it. We did the meditation at the start of this workshop, and we concluded with connecting with this space right here, the temple room where we're having this workshop, and the land upon which this particular site within the sacred site that Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, being aware of it, acknowledging it, honoring it. And then another step is to actually give it something, an offering of sorts. It can be the form of a word, a phrase, a prayer, an expression of thanksgiving. It can be a libation, which is taking water or some other liquid and pouring some onto the ground with the intention of honor and respect with request. The idea of thanking a sacred site every time that you're interacting with it is an important one, because by doing so, you complete the circle of connection and reflection. Thanksgiving can deepen your relationship. Reflecting at a sacred site, spending time to just be quiet and to be one with the site, is a really powerful way of getting to know it, of bonding with it, or having an alignment. Another important part of working with the spirit of place at a sacred site is paying attention to its caregiving. And if the protocols of that place are such that it is appreciated and encouraged for people to pick up any trash that might litter that might be there, blown from some place, or perhaps somebody was visiting that wasn't really conscious or helpful in terms of keeping the place in a wonderful space, then, you know, pick up trash. If you see something happening at a place, a fire breaking out, obviously, call and get some support to help protect the place. And the final thing I'd like to share with you is the idea of sharing the sacred place with others in a way that works with the place and with those that you're connecting with. This could be taking pictures, telling the story, sharing its lore, guiding experiences. So those are some thoughts about working with sacred place and its spirit. What I'd like to do now is open it up to questions and comments, and I'll most likely repeat whatever you're asking, because we are going to do a version of this workshop on the Circle Craft Study podcast that I do every week. So questions, comments about sacred sites. Yeah.
Some of my most sacred or special sites is the places where I'm on regularly. What comes to mind is for a year, every Sunday I would go different kinds of things. I would go to a little county park near me that had water, and there was this one area where cedar trees had fallen and made like a half circle with the roof. It fell away, and then the water was on the other side. And then following summer, I did that for all winter, and in summer, then I was in my kayak on the water on the lake right there, and it just became a very sacred and special spot.
Yes, so through frequent contact, using it and going there on a ongoing basis, your relationship just automatically developed with that sacred place through the seasons, and it became, through repeated use, it became sacred. That's great. Thanks for sharing.
Do you have any thoughts on, I found that when approaching a sacred place, really doing a graduated approach honors and lets the sort of making sure you're connecting here and there as you approach kind of helps warm the space up as you're approaching it.
I really think that's a really good idea. In fact, in looking at sacred site pilgrimage or at journeying to a sacred site, a physical journey, I see it as a five-part process. Before you even go, you reflect on going. Why are you going? What time? What do you need to prepare? So it's preparation. You get yourself in the headspace about going. What is the spiritual intention if you're making that journey as part of a spiritual practice? What are your expectations? What are your intentions? What do you need? Then, part two, journeying to the place, physically going to the place. And as one is making that journey, be it on foot or driving or a series of different means of transportation to get to the place, keeping that intention that came during the preparation time in one's mind and having a sense of the place even before arriving. Third part is arriving at the sacred place, and here there is a kind of graduated approach like you're talking about as you are making your way to the site. So here at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, some people, the whole 200 acres is sacred site, and that's true because all 200 acres is zoned as a church, and took a bit of a zoning process to have that happen. So in a sense, all 200 acres is a part of a sacred site, but we have particular areas here on the land, and as one would journey up to the stone circle, as you're approaching the stone circle, really letting it come more and more into your mind, and then before you actually step into the circle, to pay your respects, then enter the circle and, based on your intuitive rapport with the space, moving around the space and then coming to a place within that site where you will be for a time. What I like to do when I do the stone circle work is pause right at the beginning, which is in the northwest gateway, look at the circle as a whole, and call to mind how that place has evolved over time as individuals and groups have gone up and done ceremonies there and have placed stones around the circle with prayers for well-being for the planet. That all kind of flashes in my mind before I go in. And then as I step in, I experience myself entering the force field, the heart of that space. I go to each of the four quarters, and the center is part of my doing personal rites there. I start in the north, I pause, I face the north and honor that direction, but I also honor that particular part of the circle because there's a cairn, a pile of stones in each of the four directions of the circle. And in like fashion, I go one by one to each of those four quarter points, and I do it as a meditative walk. And then I circle around the center, and I see the altar stone, which is triangular of sorts, which is part of making up our central fire ring. And I think about that altar stone as not only being a place that we put ritual tools and offerings and things on it over the years since it's been the stone circle at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, but I call to mind that particular stone that was part of the very first stone circle that I helped craft with some other people at Circle Farm Number 1 near Sun Prairie, Wisconsin back in 1975. So when we moved to this land in 1983, we had a part of that original circle that went with us. So part of the spirit of place of that very first circle is part of the stone circle that's at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. And one of the other things about the stone circle as a place is that we've encouraged people to bring rocks and crystals and other similar objects to add to the stone circle, objects that have been obtained in a good way. And we've actually had bits of sacred circles in other places. People have their own stone circle in their backyard, and they'll pick one of their stones and they'll bring it to our stone circle. So there's actually not only the energy of the stone circle itself in the stones, but we have in the way that this particular site is constructed, the resonance of spirits and places from many different parts of the world, which fits with the stone circle because it was dedicated as a place for humankind to enhance their attunement with the greater web of life here on this planet and the circle as a whole. So I do think the idea of having to approach with intention and in graduated steps is really important. After one has arrived at a sacred site, has paid respect, has done a meditation, then we go into phase four of the sacred journey, and that is preparing for the journey out, giving thanks to the site, and then as one journeys from the site, starting to reflect on experiences at the site, writing them down, recording them, telling the story to someone, taking some pictures and letting that be a way to remember it. So there's a whole journeying from the site back to your home area, wherever your next destination is. And the fifth part is once you've returned, let's say, to your home, is then calling to mind your whole encounter. So that's the digestion, the integration, the taking of the sacred site experience as into your life journey and finding it a place to be. Good question. So I'm wondering, are there some other questions? Yeah, comments.
One of the most sacred places I've found is the confluence of the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers.
So the Wisconsin and the Mississippi River confluence, where they come together, is a sacred place for you.
Yes. and a very active element of water, working within the constraints of element earth, and then the presence of all the ancestors and the tribes, there is a highway, and all their stories and things that they get with it, it's just very powerful. It's just really a difference.
Yeah. In North America, there were mound building peoples, and they tended, where the mound builders were, tended to put mounds near waterways on high places. The waterways were the highways of ancient America. And I have had, as part of my sacred site studies, the opportunity to go to a number of surviving Native American mounds. Now, part of that interest is sacred sites as a whole, but part of it is ancestral. On my mother's father's side, I have some Native American ancestry, which traces its early origins back to mound building people, the Cherokee people. And I actually had already been looking at mounds and connecting with mounds before I even knew that about the Cherokee people and their link with mound building. I actually have been part of contemporary mound building at a previous pagan spirit gathering site. We decided that we would try our hand at this. It was land that had been strip mined for coal, and the land was in the process of being healed from that process, and a group of people had purchased the land, were in the process of making land payments and that kind of thing. And we decided, as part of our pagan spirit gathering experience, we would be mound builders. And that was a really powerful experience. The first mound that we built was a conical ancestor mound. It later became called the ancestor mound. And we took baskets full of dirt, which supposedly was how old mounds were created amongst different peoples across the Americas. And then after we did the initial mound, we moved on and created a turtle mound, an effigy mound. And one of the ways that we did that effigy mound was to look at some archaeological evidence of how mounds were constructed that had lasted hundreds, thousands of years, so that we would not have the trial and error piece, that ideally we would have a kind of mound that we could use and work with. And so over a period of several years, every summer solstice week, we would be putting rocks, we had kind of a rock base, and we'd be taking soil and putting it around it. And each year, at a different part of the mound, we dug a hole, and people brought sacred objects and were put in the hole with respect to the land and with the spirit of the turtle, which was selected because in a number of Native traditions, the turtle has been a metaphor, a symbol for planet Earth as a whole. And just as our stone circle at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve has been dedicated to planetary healing, this turtle mound was as well. And on summer solstice morn each year, during the decade or so that we were there, we would go to this turtle mound. We would do prayers for well-being for the earth and bury some goods, and also focus our awareness in using that site as being part of a great network of what you might call energy tracks or ley lines, if you know that part of sacred site lore, and sent forth well wishes for a greater planet, healthier planet, and not only general prayers, but some real specific prayers. Well, in 100 years or so, if that community has an archaeologist come and visit and decides to do some excavation, they will say, the people who built this mound had a vast trading network. because there were actually things from all over the place that came to that Turtle Mound. Likewise, up at the Stone Circle, if one were to do an analysis right now, which would be much easier, you just kind of go around and look at the different rocks. Literally, they're from around the world, from many different places. And some of the things in the Stone Circle are actually from monuments that have been restored, including the Statue of Liberty. I bought some of the copper used that was from the old part of the statue that was refurbished in the gift shop. Of course, I'm going to go put it in the Stone Circle. There's a bit of the Berlin Wall when it came down up in the Stone Circle. There's a bit of pottery from ancient Crete that someone who did some archaeological work was able to obtain in a good way. They didn't rip it off. It was legitimately obtained. So one of the wonderful things about sacred sites is that you have what is there, and then you have what's brought there in the way of experience. If you're creating a place to be a sacred site, I think it's really important to do considerable reflection and to work with the spirit of that land or that site before you even get too far in the planning. Develop a dialogue, a communication through dreams, through meditation, group process. Does that piece of land want you to put a sacred site there? Just because you're human and have perhaps the ability to do so doesn't make it right or a good idea. Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve was part of a multi-year quest. We had been in rented farmhouses beginning in 1975, and we realized we eventually need to get our own place. And as we were preparing to do that, we made a list of criteria. What do we want in terms of a site? Well, one of the things that we really wanted was a piece of land where we felt there was a good resonance between us and the land itself. The land, when it came up for sale, actually appeared to me in a dream. And I went to our office staff, and we have a small office in Mount Horeb, right after having that dream that very morning, and shared it with the people who were working in our office at that time. And someone who only was part of our office staff for only a few weeks or so happened to be there that day and said, oh, I know a place that came up for sale. And I thought, need to check this out. And lo and behold, did start checking it out, came to the place, and it was the land. So did we select this land for Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, or did the land reach out and select us? I think it was a bit of both, and I'm hoping one of the things to take from this workshop on sacred sites and spirit of place is that if you expand your worldview to include the concept that a place has a consciousness and has the ability to communicate and be in relation with individuals and groups, that then you can start exploring that relationship, developing that relationship, and through working with that relationship, hopefully enhance not only your own spiritual practice, but enhance whatever is happening with the place. Well, I have time for a few more questions or comments before we go out and actually do a short sacred site honoring and communion experience. Has anyone here created a place that you might call a sacred site? Yeah.
It was not even something I created. It was a few years ago. I was in a very average place. We lived in a forest. And I received a very strong message that actually changed my life. I had never been there before, and I've never been there since. I probably couldn't even find it again. And that it was such a strong experience that it's become in my mind.
So you had one of those intense happenings in that place, and it's like a portal open to a deeper way of connecting with the divine. And even if you do not know precisely where that place is, the fact is you've had that encounter through your dreaming self, your meditative self. You can journey back to that spirit of place because obviously you had a good bonding experience right there. Yeah.
I live at some, you know, I lived in Japan for a while and spent a lot of time both for academics and just for the heck of it, going to a very large number of Buddhist and Shinto spaces. And one thing that's very interesting is anybody who's ever been to Japan can tell you there's basically extremely urban and extremely rural and very little space between. So a lot of these and we're talking about multiple temples that are hundreds and hundreds of years old, are smack dab in the middle of the city, and smack dab in the middle of rather large, ugly cities at that. And I thought it was very interesting how they managed to still maintain their qualities of sacred spaces, and maintain both just in terms of the very, there's a lot of very deliberate cultivated gardening that goes on. There's use of walls, but also the use of transitional spaces to set what is often very, very small pieces of land, because land is so expensive in Japan that it's hard to belong to. But in particular, there would be very, some of the best kinds of places would be the halfway in. And then, if you've ever been to, you know, there's a temple in Japanese tradition, you realize there's always a place where you can wash your hands and wash your mouth. And those rituals that you do before entering that space, I noticed were useful to maintaining the sacredness of it, even in what were really terribly crap settings. Kyomizu-dera in Tokyo is right on top of the hill. You can see it from much of the city. It's one of the iconic places. Japanese, there's incredible tourist traffic. I mean, it almost feels like Disney World level of traffic. It has a very wide path. Yet, unlike Disney World, it actually feels sacred. I think part of that is because we've used the very, and we've used the very, very formulaic ritual, which everybody knows. So despite the fact, there's, you know, like 5 feet away from, you know, the sacred entrance, there's a gift shop. I mean, it's as outside as the craft as you can possibly get. And inside it contains a lot of its character through the use of these very sort of set ways of approaching space. I just think that that's useful for anyone trying to create a sacred space. And like we were talking about, if you approach right.
Yeah, so in looking at Japanese Shinto and Buddhist temples, what you have learned is the value of the approach in the space. So even if a temple is in a very urban area with pollution, whatever, having a place to wash hands and mouth as one approaches and having that intention as you go deeper into the space really helps preserve it and its character. And I do think with protocols, many places do require that you take off your shoes, indoor spaces in particular, you might need to be smudged with some kind of incense or washing your hands. Some, depending on the type of religion, some places require head uncovered, some require head covered. So that depends on the place that you're at. Some won't let you take any pictures. Some will. Some, you need to be totally silent. Others are much more open to what you might want to do. Here, our main protocol is that if you're going to any of the ceremonial areas on the sacred land as a whole, that one respects that space, doesn't take anything from it, without making prior arrangements. And if somebody is already using that space to be conscious of them, and if they're meditating, do your best not to disturb that meditation. And We do allow offerings to be left at a number of our places. And here at Circle Sanctuary, we have our mugwort circle around the maypole. We have our bonfire circle, which is between the house and the barn. We have our festival circle out in Meadowdale Field, where we have our large group ceremonies. We have Bridget Spring, which bubbles year-round. On another part of the land, we have the Sacred Fire Circle, which is the sacred space for our Fire Circle weekends, which happen several times a year. We also have the Stone Circle that I've mentioned before, and we have a 20-acre cemetery that's within our 200 acres. And we have the natural burying ground part of the cemetery, and then we have the cremains part. And then we have a beautiful restored prairie, which even before that became part of the expanded cemetery for cremains to be scattered there. We were doing ceremonies in this restored prairie. We have Spirit Rock, which is the oldest that we're aware of the sacred sites that has been used here on this land. And there are a number of other places here, some rock shelters, some Native American places that are more tucked away. And then we have some trees that people have adopted or have been adopted by the tree. And we now have a tamarack grove down by Bridget Spring. And so one of the great things about having this 200-acre site is there's a number of ceremonial places within this sacred land. And as I go from place to place as one of the caregivers of this land, I'm always amazed to find what kind of offerings get left, the wonderful things, kind of delights and things. Well, I want to thank everyone for being part of the Sacred Site Spirit of Place workshop indoor portion, because in a few moments we're going to journey forth outdoors. And what I'm going to do is pass around the sacred cups, because we're actually going to have a chance to do libations. If you brought your own cup to do a libation with, then you can use that and take a cup. And what will we be doing? We will be going to a nearby place, and I have some libation tea. This is wild berry balm tea mixed with some water, and we'll have a chance to put some in our cup, and we're going to together go to a place in a few moments and pay our respects and do group ritual, and then there'll be a chance for you, if you wish, to go to some other area around the land and do a short meditation if you'd like to do that. Thank you.
where light of the moon fills your eyes. Stand at the door of a new world. Follow your heart and go
Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.